time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
3-2 pitch. Fastball belted, deep right.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two on a Thursday edition of Overtime. Minnesota Vikings, hour number one is behind us. Podcast link available for your consumption right now, wherever you get your podcasts, ESPNSiouxFalls.com, or easier than both of those, just download the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Still to come on today's show, headlines, highlights, more on the New York Knicks finding a way to grind out a Game 1 victory, NBA talk, NHL sprinkle, and then, of course, we conclude the show getting you your NFL news of the day, which is centered up on firmly the Green Bay Packers. Yesterday, we got the news directly from the player himself that Micah Parsons is targeting a 9-month return time frame, which means he's not going to return for week one. He will likely be back week number 5 and start the season on the PUP list. That from Micah himself, not yet confirmed officially by the team. We'll digest that news. Also, the big news that the Packers have tied up another one of their young stars via contract extension. Got the deal done with Jaden Reed 2-3-4 weeks ago. And now they get the deal done with Christian Watson. Big one. 4 years, $110.5 million. But if you look at that in the same viewpoint as the Alec Pierce deal, less money for Watson. Very likely to be less guaranteed money as well. And the Drake London deal that was done just yesterday, Drake London got $141 million over 4 years. And again, it's all about the guaranteed money. But $141 over four for London, $111 over four for Packer wide receiver and NDSU Bison alum Christian Watson as of today. That news and more, followed by the good, the bad, and the ugly before we're done on a Thursday. Into the NBA Finals last night, the Spurs looked pretty darn good. They did not look great at any stretch last night. Wemby was making his way through it. The Knicks got out to a nice start. Brunson got dinged up. Even went to the locker room with a knee concern. Came out thinking about wrapping up the knee. Didn't wrap it up for long. Was out there on the floor. Got his ankle stepped on. Grinded through it all. His team, the New York Knicks, trailed by 14 in the second half. They find their way back to win 105-95. And frankly, a dominant second half of action for those New York Knicks. Brunson had 30, not efficient. I think he took about 29 shots last night, had 30 points. Karl Anthony Towns, though, one of the most important players on either side last night, held his own and then some, took quite a lot of hits, bumps, and bruises in the win. Knicks win 105-95. Cat had 18 and 12 last night to be among the leaders in the game. Wemby 26-12 for the Spurs, who go down 0-1, 1-0 in the series. Game 2 coming up on Friday night. Knicks and the Spurs from San Antonio, 7:30 on ABC. Spurs are favored by 5.5 points. Into the NHL. Stanley Cup Final Series continues tonight with game number 2. Knights and the Hurricanes from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina a -162 favorite on the puck line. Major League Baseball, Detroit beat Tampa again yesterday 7-2. Tigers getting the wheels going in the right direction. Finally, 25-38, their record. Long way to go. Minnesota was looking for a sweep of Chicago. Here's the wrap from yesterday's afternoon matinee from Chris Atterbury on the Treasure Island Baseball Network.
Afternoon at Target Field, and after toppling Davis Martin the night before, the Twins gunning for a sweep of the White Sox with Taj Bradley on the mound. But the White Sox had other ideas. Sam Antonacci, the first of his 4 hits to open the ballgame. And then it was Miguel Vargas, the first of a career-high tying 5 walks issued by Bradley. Andrew Benintendi singled, and the bases were loaded with nobody out, and it was uh-oh time. Colson Montgomery struck out, but Chase Meidroth walked to force in a run. And then it was Jacob Gonzalez. Gonzalez 0-for-4, 4 strikeouts the night before, but he changed that script. And this one hit through the left side, and that's going to be a base hit. Here comes Vargas. Benintendi will round. He's going to score as well. Meidroth goes to third. White Sox jumping all over Taj Bradley here in the opening frame. It's a two-run single the other way for the rookie, Jacob Gonzalez, in his fourth big league game. Bradley did not give up another run over a laborious outing. Just those four runs over four and two-thirds. He threw 104 pitches. In fact, the Twins wouldn't give up another run until the eighth inning, when we saw an RBI single from Miguel Vargas and also a two-run homer from Andrew Benintendi. But I tell you what, the Twins couldn't do anything against Eric Fetty. They didn't get a hit until there were two outs in the fifth inning, a single by Luke Keyshaw. They totaled just five hits in the ballgame. And in fact, they're shut out for the very first time this year, meaning that only the Baltimore Orioles have yet to be blanked in the big leagues this season. The White Sox salvage one. Twins win the series but lose the finale. 8-0 Chicago on your home for Twins baseball.
That was Chris Atterbury's recap yesterday. Again, the Twins fall 8-0. First time they're shut out this entire season. Record 29-34. White Sox advanced their mark to 33-29. Taj Bradley took the loss, just his second of the season. He's 5-2. Here's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Takeaways from the series in which the Twins won 2-3.
I mean, against a team that beat us last week, and we played well in two games. Today, we just, you know, we got behind early and couldn't climb out of it.
That's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Other notable finals, Cleveland beat the Yankees in New York yesterday 5-4. Kansas City over Cincy 5-2. Milwaukee blanked at home against San Francisco in a 1-0 final. Other notables, St. Louis over Texas 5-3. The A's hand the Cubs another loss 5-4 in extras in Wrigley. Chicago on the cusp of falling to 500 pretty darn soon. The Cubbies are 32-30 after a very hot start to the year. And then on to the tennis world on the women's side of the French Open. We'll get you a live scoreboard update here as we are tracking match number two of the day from Roland Garros in the tennis world, continuing to move forward. Women are in the semifinals, and earlier on today it was Maria Andreeva beating Marta Kostyuk earlier on today. Get you that final score here in just a moment. And then the updated score from the match that was live earlier still remains live. So Andreeva beats Kostyuk earlier 6-1, 6-3. On the other side of the bracket, Diana Schneider, the 25th seed, dropped set one to Maya Swalinska. Doing my best on the names here. Swalinska won at 7-6 in a tiebreak, and Schneider leading set two. Live right now, TNT, HBO Max, and True TV. Schneider leads in set two, 4-3. On the men's side yesterday, Italian Flavio Caboli moves on past four seed Felix Auger-Aliassime, 4-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. And Matteo Arnaldi defeated Matteo Berrettini via retirement in the second set, 7-5, 5-2. Arnaldi was on top. He's moving on. And it'll be an all-Italian semifinal. Arnaldi, Caboli, noon tomorrow. And then tomorrow in the morning, 7:30, it'll be Jacob Mensik, the 26th seed, battling second seed Alexander Zverev. That is a 7:30 go time. D1 softball, wanted to update you on the World Series Championship Series. Texas Tech lost to Texas last night, 7-3. Longhorns are one win away from winning it all. They'll have their first opportunity to do that tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Red Raiders and the Longhorns in that matchup. And a reminder as well, D1 baseball super regionals are set. Action begins Friday, runs through the entirety of the weekend, then wraps on Monday. West Virginia, Cal Poly. Other matchups, Troy, Little Rock. North Carolina's got USC. Ole Miss takes on Auburn. Kansas takes on Oklahoma. Bama taking on St. John's. Texas meeting Oregon. And Georgia against Mississippi State. Those are the 16 teams remaining. Field will be trimmed to 8 for Omaha in just a couple of weeks. Let's dive right in to your ReliaBank headlines of the day. It's hour number two on a Thursday. As always, for a better local banking option, you can check ReliaBank out in person in the 605 or online at ReliaBank.com. The Northern Sun Intercollegiate Conference has released its annual NSIC All Sports Award, given to the institution that won the most conference-sponsored championships during the past year. Augustana took home the men's award, totaling 94 points, defeating second-place Mankato by 7.5 points. The Vikings took third on the women's side after they tallied 95 total points. Minnesota State Mankato collected 140 to win the women's standings in the NSIC All Sports Award overall standings. Minnesota State won their ninth award since rejoining the league in 2008. MSU won seven regular season titles throughout the year. Augustana had another solid year, winning three regular season titles in men's cross country, baseball, and women's tennis. The Vikings and Mavs will be presented their awards on Tuesday, July the 7th at the NSIC Hall of Fame Banquet, which will be held in Bloomington, Minnesota. Minnesota Twins news to get in here quickly before we dive into the break here in hour number two. The Toronto Blue Jays have come calling, acquiring right-handed pitcher Simeon Woods Richardson from the Minnesota Twins for cash considerations. This went down just last night. And we all know entering this season for Minnesota, they were going to be without Pablo Lopez. So you looked at guys like Simeon Woods Richardson, Zebby Matthews, Bailey Ober. Joe Ryan is what he is, really good player. He's an established starter and another trade target up ahead of this year's deadline. But the other names I mentioned, SWR, Zebby, Ober, a couple other guys, Taj Bradley included in that conversation. Twins Nation was saying, okay, time to shine. This is your opportunity. Prove it. And SWR has not been great this year, 0-7. With a 7.74 ERA in 12 games, he made 10 starts this year. His seven losses and 41 earned runs allowed were tops in the majors. So Minnesota had already demoted the 25-year-old pitcher earlier this week and designated for assignment. And the 25-year-old, 12-17 with a 4.76 ERA for his career, previously pitched in the minors for Toronto. So they are familiar with Simeon Woods Richardson and now traded to Toronto, back to Toronto for cash considerations, which if you know baseball, we don't really know exactly what that means. If it's a money ball situation, hey, how about $100,000 and you fill up my soda machine for the rest of the year? Or if it's $1 million, $2 million, we don't really know. Cash considerations, very vague when it comes to Major League Baseball. But that news, Simeon Woods Richardson to the Toronto Blue Jays from the Minnesota Twins for some cash, available at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. We will take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive right into an emphatic win last night for the New York Knicks. Did they steal game one? Not so sure. I think they earned their way back. That was an unwavered group yesterday for the New York Knicks. Very impressive road win in game one, just like we saw in the NHL. For the Vegas Golden Knights a couple nights ago, NHL up to bat tonight. We'll see game two in the NBA Finals tomorrow night as we're heating up to conclude the NBA NHL seasons in the week ahead. Now, we'll come back with the Knicks grinding out a game one win, latest news from the NBA and NHL, and then we'll get to the NFL news and the good, the bad, the ugly before we're done on this Thursday, June 4th edition of Overtime.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. All Vikings talk constrained for now to hour number one. Dustin Baker in studio along with Stone Baker. You want to listen back? That podcast link is available online at ESPNSiouxFalls.com, on your phone with the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Also accessible wherever you get your podcast. It is summertime. We are warming up. It's time for the splash pad, the pool, all sorts of fun. And you can stay cool with some great ice cream at Quick Star. Step into something delicious today. Quick Star's Heartland Ice Cream, the newest scoop in the Nature's Touch ice cream family. There are 12 different enchanting flavors to discover this summer at Quick Star. You can get into a pint for just $3.99. And before your first bite, make sure you keep an eye out for the Golden Scoop. If you find it at your local Quick Star in the Heartland Ice Cream, you could win ice cream factory tour, fun merchandise, and free ice cream for a year. Sounds like a dream to me and the fam. Free ice cream for a year and more. Every scoop just got magically sweeter. Enjoy some ice cream treats with Heartland's ice cream at your local Quick Star. And an opportunity to find that golden scoop could net you free ice cream for a year, a factory tour, fun merchandise, and more. Every scoop is a delight. Details at quickstar.com/sweepstakes. Find the golden scoop and win. Only at Quickstar. Also, quickly, before we move on, quickly with Quickstar, make sure you download that app, the Quick Rewards app. I got it on my phone every single time I'm even thinking of going on a Saturday during the week. I pull it up. I look at the deals. And right now, I got a free Big Buddy drink, soft drink at Quickstar. You could have great rewards like that as well. The Quick Rewards app before you go out to your local Quickstar location. Let's talk hockey quickly. We will see game number two of the Stanley Cup Final tonight from Raleigh, where the Hurricanes are ticked off right now, as they should be. Down 1-0 in the series, 7 o'clock on ABC. Can't wait for that one. Golden Knights at the Canes. Carolina, a minus 162 favorite to win game two and equalize the series at a game apiece. John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning has finally won the Jack Adams Award as the NHL Coach of the Year. The 58-year-old completed his 14th season as Tampa's head coach. He led Tampa to a third-place finish in the Eastern Conference during a season that saw them play through significant lineup absences from stars such as defenseman Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh, as well as top center Brayden Point. Lindy Ruff was also a very well-deserving candidate. He led the Sabres to their first playoff appearance since 2011. That would have been my best guess and my preference, but the award goes to John Cooper, also very deserving. First-year coach Dan Muse of the Pittsburgh Penguins were the other finalists, along with Lindy Ruff. Cooper won the award with a razor-thin margin over Ruff. Cooper had 226 points that included 36 first-place votes. Ruff was second, 223, with 26 first-place votes yesterday. Well, last night in the NBA Finals, we saw a lot go down. There was not a sense of panic from the Knicks when Jalen Brunson limped gingerly to the locker room late in the first quarter of Wednesday night's Game 1 of the Finals after the Spurs' Harrison Barnes landed on his right knee, inadvertently, of course. Nor was there panic when San Antonio, looking fresher and more explosive, built a 14-point lead in the third quarter. Perhaps it's because the Knicks have been on this magic carpet ride, according to ESPN.com, for weeks, having won every postseason game since Game 3 in the first round in Atlanta, a loss that seemingly woke them up and created a playoff monster that has dominated since. It was the Knicks' 12th straight playoff win last night, and it was a familiar formula. Fall behind, get to within striking distance, and clear the way for some dude named Jalen Brunson to finish the job. Knicks head coach Mike Brown saying, "Jalen, he was the MVP in the second half. He was huge for us. He did what MVP candidates are supposed to do, carried us home, put the ball in his hands, and he got it done for us down the stretch." He certainly did. And if you look at the stats, if you watched the game last night, you kind of got the sense that it was a lackluster effort from Victor Wembanyama. And it was a very above-the-bar effort from the role players of the New York Knicks, especially the sharpshooters from outside that were able to knock down some big shots like a Landry Shamet. And then you get a very resilient appearance and a resilient DNA of Jalen Brunson. It's really hard to root against that guy in any stretch of the imagination, unless you are a vehement Knick hater or a Spur lover. I would imagine that Jalen Brunson is a treat to watch. He absolutely is in the NBA Finals as the Knicks take a 1-0 lead in the series. Not a surprising lead, but a marginal upset in the eyes of Vegas last night as the Spurs entered as a 4.5-point favorite. Victor Wembanyama accepted responsibility for his role in San Antonio's first Game 1 loss in the NBA Finals in franchise history, but said he wasn't, quote, worried in the slightest. Here is the clip, audio clip, from Victor Wembanyama, courtesy of SportsCenter.
It's obviously, I mean, it's not we've been down in a series before, never in the finals, obviously. But I'm not kicking myself about anything, really. I mean, I'm not worried the slightest.
Victor Wembanyama, "I'm not worried in the slightest." That as of last night, post-game. And yes, it was a unique kind of game last night. I kind of laud the New York Knicks for their trio or triumvirate of defenders. OG Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson, also, of course, Karl-Anthony Towns doing a nice job. It's impossible to completely slow him down. Wemby still put up 26 and 12, but they were physical. They were all over him at the top of the key as he was looking to drive in. They were absurdly together and physical last night on defense to where they limited Wemby's impact. And then the kickout passes, the open three looks that the Spurs had, generally speaking, in big moments of the game and the come from behind effort late, didn't go in, didn't have a lot of good looks. And there was a very costly turnover by Wemby late in the fourth quarter as the Spurs were looking to hang around. Knicks win 105-95, but Brian Windhorst expects an angry resurgent Spurs team in game two.
I would say in any final series, you go down 0-1, you're going to have to win game two. And I'll be honest with you, we're going to focus on game two, especially later today. But as I was walking out of the arena last night, and the Knicks fans didn't want to leave. They had to kick him out of the joint. They all wanted to stay. My mind started thinking about Monday night. Because Monday night at the Garden is setting up to be wild and super high stakes. The Spurs do not want to walk into that environment facing a dire situation. So I expect them to review this film very thoroughly. I don't think the adjustments that they're going to have to make are going to be sweeping. But they are definitely going to feel some pressure. And I will say this, the Spurs have felt pressure several times in this postseason. They've faced elimination several times in this postseason, and they have always responded. So the Knicks and I should expect a strong response from the Spurs tomorrow night.
That's Brian Windhorst on Get Up as of this morning. Certainly, that adds a lot of fuel to the fire for the remainder of the series. Game number two going to be Friday night. That spread is out. San Antonio, a little bit more favored in game two than they were in game one. Very similar to what we're seeing for the Carolina Hurricanes tonight in the NHL. Spurs by 5.5. The early spread at DraftKings Sportsbook and the Stanley Cup Final. Game two continues tonight from Raleigh. Canes home to the Golden Knights. 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina minus 162 on the puck line. Lastly, from your NBA news for now, update on the LA Clippers situation and the situation surrounding Aspiration and Kawhi Leonard. You remember that? We'll update you on that right now. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver declined Wednesday to put a timeline on the conclusion of the investigation of the Clippers and their potential salary cap circumvention. But he said the time to, quote, wrap it up is drawing near. The investigation has been conducted by a law firm independent of the NBA. Ultimately, we're paying their bills, but they're doing the work independent of the league office. And my instruction to them is we can't be investigating forever, but at some point we have to wrap it up. At the same time, the most important thing is that we get it right. That is absolutely true, because the details here, the accusations here, are pretty darn damning. The investigation led by the firm Wachtell Lipton, Rosen and Katz began in September and is focused on whether the Clippers circumvented the salary cap by funneling money to star Kawhi Leonard through his $28 million endorsement deal with green banking company Aspiration, which also had a $300 million 23-year endorsement deal with the team. Clippers owner Steve Ballmer, who invested $60 million in Aspiration, has denied he had knowledge of Leonard's deal or that he directed the company to strike one. Aspiration has since gone bankrupt. The company's co-founder Joe Sandberg was sentenced to 14 years in prison on Monday after pleading guilty to two counts of wire fraud. This is an ugly situation. Talk about it in college football or college sports. Hey, come to the University of wherever. We'll get you this much money. We'll get you this car sponsored by this dealership. We'll get you this. We'll get you free food at this restaurant. There's all sorts of fringe benefits, ancillary benefits there for athletes. And this is not legal in the NBA if it were to have happened. Alleged activity that Aspiration was going to pay $30 million in an endorsement to Kawhi Leonard, a no-show endorsement sort of deal. Whether or not that was part of what lured Kawhi to be to L.A., lured Kawhi to stay in L.A., we don't know. Investigation ongoing, but that's the latest update from Adam Silver. Needs to, quote, wrap up soon. Speaking of wrapping up soon, this show has its minutes numbered. We got about half hour left, but luckily, we've got a lot to get to next segment, and mostly centered to start on the Green Bay Packers. Micah Parsons is officially going to start the season on the PUP, physically unable to perform list for the Green Bay Packers. When could he be back? What kind of impact does it have on game one against those Minnesota Vikings? Not good for my prospects of avoiding a run to work after week one with the Vikings and Packers from U.S. Bank Stadium. NFL news to get to, a payday for a Packer wide receiver, and then the good, the bad, the ugly, all before we're done. Coming up next on a Thursday edition of Overtime right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday, June 4th edition of Overtime. A lot to look forward to tomorrow on the show. We will be visited by Clark Cup champion winning head coach Ryan Crothers tomorrow on the program of the Sioux Falls Stampede. Don't miss it. Also opportunities to win with the Friday Parlay and the High Noon Showdown tomorrow on the program. Well, the Packers' opportunities to win early on in the season may have taken a big dent in a dive yesterday. Micah Parsons' initial hope that he could return within the first month of the season was never realistic, and the Packers star edge rusher has come to terms with that. Parsons said yesterday that he's just past the five-month mark of his ACL surgery, which he also revealed included a procedure on his meniscus, and that he won't be cleared to be back on the football field, even to practice, until the nine-month mark. That's according to Parsons himself yesterday. That would put his earliest possible return to practice in late September, and the Packers likely would not allow him to play in a game until several weeks of practice. Parsons likely to open the season on the PUP list, physically unable to perform, which means he would automatically miss at least four games. Now, if you are in the conspiracy theory crowd and the schedule makers and the script writers, week number five, the first game that Parsons could come back is against the Chicago Bears. And then week six is against the Dallas Cowboys for the Green Bay Packers. We'll wait and see. Here's what Parsons had to say. The goal for me is to complete the season, not any relapse in playoffs and pushing toward a championship. The goal isn't for me to go out there and re-hurt myself, trying to force myself to get back in the first few games. The goal has always been to be available for the playoffs, and I think we're all on the same page. Parsons sustained his knee injury December 14th, had surgery nearing the new year on December 29th, shortly after the season, and he said he hoped he could return within the first month of 2026, which opens September 13th at Minnesota. Had pretty strong, good nine-month rule, Parsons said of the Green Bay Packers. Through the research and data, there's no good outcomes with players coming back early from an ACL, especially if you had other things to get fixed up. It's just all about completing the rehab to the best of our ability and then seeing where we're at from here. Now, I'm going to be honest here. The timing of this news is not great relative to the news itself. This was a foregone conclusion in the eyes of many. Many had speculated and said Micah's not going to be ready week one. Might be a PUP list that gives somebody else that's very healthy a chance at a roster spot, likely a different pass rusher, and that's a boost for Green Bay to go ahead and put Parsons on the shelf. Now, the news yesterday isn't earth-shattering or bad or awful or ugly for Green Bay. It's just a little bit earlier than you would like somebody to be ruled out on the PUP list at this stage. But Micah clarifying, the Packers and myself have a firm nine-month rule, and you got to like the continuity there is, yes, it is not about week one, two, three, or four. It's about week 17, 18, 19, 20, all the way up to Super Bowl 61 for the Green Bay Packers. Speaking of those Packers, big news this morning. That news from Parsons yesterday, Christian Watson, NDSU Bison alum, has signed a massive four-year contract extension. Watson this morning agreeing to a four-year, $110.5 million deal that includes a $31 million signing bonus. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, this came after Jaden Reed signed a three-year, $50 million extension back in late April. The 27-year-old Watson previously signed a one-year, $11 million contract last September as a gap deal during his return from a torn ACL in 2024. Now, Christian Watson, if you watch football and you watch Watson on a football field, he's dynamic, he's big, he's strong, he's fast, he can block, he can do it all. The issue is he's battled a bevy of injuries throughout his years in the NFL. He's been in the league for 4 years, and he's never had over 700 yards in a season. He had 9 touchdowns as a rookie, and he's got no avoidance of the end zone. He scores touchdowns all the time. But the yardage, the receptions, are both a detriment due to the offense that they play in and the fact that he hasn't been on the field more often than not. Last year, he was fantastic. If you extrapolate his stats out to a full 16 games following the ACL recovery that held him out till week 6, week 7, Watson was a really darn good receiver last year. Packers are betting on him yet again. This is a big deal. 4-year, 111-ish million-dollar contract. And if you're looking for a comparison, the new money average of $27.6 million is almost exactly what the franchise tag is on Cowboy wide receiver George Pickens. However, the 4-year, $111 million deal is less than what Alec Pierce got in Indianapolis and far less what Drake London got in Atlanta just yesterday. London got $141 over 4 years. Watson, $110.5 over 4 years. We're waiting on the overall cash guaranteed money in the deal. Those details will come out sooner than later. But you got to like this move for Green Bay. Your core moving forward at receiver, pass catcher in Green Bay is going to be Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, Savion Williams, and Tucker Kraft. Tucker Kraft is the next action item on the Packers offseason agenda. I would venture a guess the Kraft's deal will get done. His long-term extension as the future long-term tight end of the Green Bay Packers going to get done in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. We'll see on Kraft. Typically, when you're into OTAs, you want to get those done as soon as possible. It appears that Kraft is attacking rehab, doesn't have the ability to practice just yet in Green Bay. But he's doing all the right things. He's not holding out. He's not away from the team. They're going to be working on his contract, as Brian Gutekunst called it, a priority earlier on in the offseason. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers are handing out a bunch of money to not full-time players this week. The Steelers, earlier this week, paid Nick Herbig, third-string pass rusher, a bunch of money, 4 years, $100 million. And now they're paying their backup tight end on a 4-year, $42 million extension, that is tight end Darnell Washington, a massive human and a really good player. 6'7", 300-pounder, Washington has been used as a big red zone target in Pittsburgh, but the former Georgia player has also shown an ability to overpower defenders in space. Think of a young Mercedes Lewis. When you talk about Darnell Washington, last year the Steelers had Connor Hayward at tight end, Pat Freiermuth at tight end. They also had Jonnu Smith and Darnell Washington, and then there were two. Washington, Freiermuth for now. Keep you updated on other Steeler players to be paid, but an interesting future forward approach by the Steelers front office. They get Herbig in-house, the future at pass rusher. They keep him around in a big 4-year deal. He's behind a couple players at pass rush, including TJ Watt. And now they're paying their backup tight end some pretty premium money, 4-year, $42 million for one of the better pass blocker, massive human tight ends in the National Football League right now. The Kansas City Chiefs could get really darn lucky this offseason and turn around and be pretty darn good this season. You know, they might still have a reunion with one Tyreek Hill in the bag. We'll wait. But they might be have a reunion with L'Jarius Sneed as soon as today. The veteran cornerback is visiting with the Chiefs as of today, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. The 29-year-old played his first 4 years with the Chiefs before they traded him to Tennessee back in 2024. Steed was instrumental in helping Kansas City win back-to-back Super Bowls in 22 and 23. His 2 seasons in Tennessee, marred by injuries, Steed played just 12 games over the last 2 years. On the field for 7 contests last year, 26 tackles with 3 passes defended. Chiefs have a need at corner as they let both Jalen Watson go and Trent McDuffie go via trade. And in 69 games, 66 career starts, Sneed has 10 interceptions, 43 passes defense, 4 forced fumbles, 3 recoveries, and 6.5 sacks. L'Jarius Sneed, I would say, likely-ish to be back with the Kansas City Chiefs as soon as this afternoon. More bad news for Brandon Ayuk. One of the weirder situations in all of pro sports right now is Brandon Ayuk. Got paid by the Niners, got injured on the football field, completely and totally ghosted the team, reportedly all of last year. And he's on the trade block and soon to be on the chopping block, cutting block as well. The Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office has also issued a warrant for the arrest of the Niners wide receiver on a misdemeanor charge of exhibition of speeding. And if you like really dumb news, what the heck were you doing news? This is the creme de la creme, if we're honest. The warrant is in reference to a video that Aiyuk posted himself back in December, in which he appears to tape himself from the driver's seat of his car going well over the posted 40-mile-per-hour speed limit on a road that runs past Levi Stadium. The DA's office confirmed to ESPN on Wednesday. A few days after posting the video, Aiyuk apologized for sharing the video of himself driving a Cadillac CT5V Blackwing on Tasman Drive just outside of the Niners' home field. "Sorry, y'all, my car content won't come with speeding anymore," Aiyuk wrote then in a post to YouTube. "Was praying with my son tonight, and I wouldn't want anybody else to miss out on an opportunity to do the same with their loved ones. My apologies." Amid news of the warrant being issued for his arrest, Aiyuk posted a video to Instagram on Wednesday of himself driving a car on a racetrack. Following the incident, the Santa Clara Police Department indicated it would investigate whether any criminal charges would be filed. The case forwarded to the DA's office on January 15th, and the California Post first reporting the warrant being issued. Brandon Aiyuk videoing himself speeding right in front of the Niners stadium, where you know exactly what street he's on, the speed limit on that. Not a good look. D-U-M-B in all caps for Brandon Aiyuk. We'll keep you updated on what's next there. Well, new Browns edge rusher Jared Verse said he's not seeking to replace Myles Garrett after Monday's trade that sent him to from L.A. to Cleveland. "I'm not here to fill Myles Garrett's shoes," Verse said Wednesday after his first practice with the Browns. "I'm here to bring my own. Here to work. I'm here to be the best version of me. And the best version of me is going to be the best defensive player in the league. And the best defensive player in the league is going to play for the best defense in the league." Nice commentary there from Jared Verse. And he's not blowing smoke here. We are talking about the return in this trade. Myles Garrett is the better player today. Might be the better player tomorrow. Might be the better player till 2029, 2030. But Jared Verse is a darn good young pass rusher in this league. Browns got cheaper, younger, more cap flexible, and are going to be building around a 25-year-old who is still on the up and up. We don't know exactly what Jared Verse will be, but what he is today is a dynamic, young, scary edge rusher in the NFL. The Browns just got rid of the boogeyman edge rusher, the best edge rusher in the league and the best the league has seen in quite some time in Myles Garrett. But you like the return and you like the overall honesty from Jared Verse. Also said yesterday in that presser, "You know, I got to be honest with you. I was not happy about it. I was bummed about leaving L.A. I loved L.A., loved the organization, loved the coaches." He was very candid about that. And there was no pot shot at the Cleveland Browns. Although, of course, you could always assume, "Oh, gosh, I'm going to Cleveland, really?" But he said all the right things, was very honest yesterday, and Jared Verse already making some fans there in Cleveland. Speaking of fans, George Kittle has a lot of those. Despite tearing his right Achilles and having it surgically repaired just 19 weeks ago, the Niners tight end believes he's on track to return, not at some point, not week 5 like Micah Parsons, but how about week 1? With an Achilles injury, speaking to Bay Area media on Wednesday, Kittle said the Achilles is, quote, doing great, and then he's had no setbacks, adding that it's realistic to think he could be back from such a devastating injury roughly 8 months after he suffered it. "When I had the surgery and Dr. Neil Elatrache told me, hey, I think if you do everything the right way, you have a chance. It definitely ignites something and makes you push for it," Kittle said. "We're on track and we are ahead of schedule." Big news there for George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers. Could be back as soon as week number 1. Impressive stuff there for Kittle. Let's talk about Russell Wilson. The 10-time Pro Bowl quarterback confirmed yesterday in a video posted to social media, worth the watch if you haven't seen it, that he's retiring from the NFL to take a job with CBS Sports. Now, Russell Wilson's got an interesting case, a very interesting career, but the more I stew on it and sit on it and think about it, the debate yesterday that we tossed up in the air about Russell Wilson, Hall of Famer, what do you think? Water cooler talk. The more I'm kind of leaning into, yes, he is a Hall of Famer. And you might say, oh man, they're letting anybody in these days. But Russell Wilson was doubted for size, doubted for ability, for the want to, the how to, the have to of his career. But if you look at Russ's stats versus other guys that are going to get in, likely like an Eli Manning, a Philip Rivers. We're going to pull those up with you right now and do this debate live. We'll do it live on the air with you because Russell Wilson, to me, was a better quarterback large part of his career than an Eli Manning, largely better than Philip Rivers. If you think about feared quarterbacks, dynamic runners, play extenders, guy that can throw the deep ball very well, Russell Wilson was that and then some. And you talk about guys that changed the game, changed the perception of the game, changed the rules of the game. The guys that come in and defenses have to adjust because it's unlike anything you've ever seen. He's not a Cam Newton type where it's a physically different person than you've ever seen. But Russell, really, he and Drew Brees both kind of rewrote the narrative about guys under 6 feet or guys at 6 feet that are able to be top-tier quarterbacks. Russ was never a bona fide MVP, handed out, he got snubbed kind of guy, but he was always a top 10-ish quarterback for the majority of his career. And we told you yesterday, in regards to the departure from Seattle in the final 5 years of his career, Seattle, Denver, Denver, Pittsburgh, New York, 5 years, that tainted and tarnished his legacy, and recency bias is a real thing. And anybody telling you, man, Russell Wilson, he's so great, if there's anybody that's 10, 12, 15 years old, an NFL fan, they're looking at you saying, what are you talking about? That dude's trash, as a kid would say. But the Seattle Seahawks quarterback went to 4 Pro Bowls in his first 4 years, won double-digit games in every single year in Seattle except for 2. One of those years, he won 9-9-7. Also was in the Offensive Rookie of the Year hunt, AP, All-Pro player for a while as well. And Russell Wilson went to 2 Super Bowls very early in his career, should have won both. Again, we highlighted the beast mode, should have been handoff. Instead, the intercepted slant route to Ricardo Lockett in the hands of Malcolm Butler. Russ was that close to 2 Super Bowls. Now, Eli Manning, who many people are saying, Bert, he's getting in, don't be a hater. I am always going to be an Eli Manning hater because both of his Super Bowl rings came after beating my Packers in the postseason. But Eli finished his career with a record of 117-117, 60% completion, 57,000 yards. Now, Russ, 121-80-1 as a starter, 65% completion, and a total of 47,000 passing yards for Russ. Similar touchdown numbers, the interception numbers nowhere close. Eli threw 244. Russ took care of the ball through 114. Now, Philip Rivers, miles ahead in yardage. Very similar, identical completion percentage. Philip Rivers' winning percentage a little lower than Russ. And same deal there. With the touchdown to interception ratio, Russell is the class of the three. Rivers never got a ring. Russ has got one, nearly two. Eli's got 2 rings. If you put them all 3 in, that's probably the best move. But if there's a pecking order there, it is Eli or Russell 1, Rivers 2. Despite Rivers being the most accomplished statistical quarterback, it's about the rings, it's about the postseason success and the impact. And I am 4, to be clear, always going to be 4, putting people into the Hall of Fame in any sport that changed the game in one way or another. And Russell, along with Brees, and maybe Kyler Murray, are changing the narrative and have changed the narrative regarding short quarterbacks. And short, of course, up for interpretation, but we used to say, if you're under 6 feet, you can't make it. Doug Flutie was an outlier. He was fun. He was not very good. That's the general adage of the time. But you get Drew Brees, you get Russell Wilson. Now we talk about those guys when we're talking about a Dylan Gabriel or Kyler Murray, whoever is the below average size quarterback. We're saying, well, we got this proof of concept. We got that. We got Russ. We got Drew Brees. I'm a fan of putting Russell Wilson in the Hall of Fame, despite the obvious lackluster swan song of his career. Moving on to CBS Sports. Let's round out the show. The good, the bad, and the ugly, brought to you as always by Lewis Drug and Lewis Lawn and Garden. Right now at Lewis, you can get into a great grill, the Weber Spirit EPLP Gas Grill, on sale this week for $450, usually $649. It features powerful boost burners that unleash 40% more power for perfect sear marks and caramelization every time. Check it out at your local Lewis Drug. Good news first, Tegan Caven pitched a complete game 3-hitter last night. Katie Stewart hit her 4th home run in as many games, and Texas opened the Women's College World Series Championship round with a 7-3 win over rival Texas Tech. last night. The number two seed Longhorns can wrap up their second consecutive national championship with a victory in game two coming up tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Winners of game one in softball have gone on to win the title 80% of the time since the best of three series format began in 2005. Other news to get to, bad news for a pair of ACC schools that were looking to go international. The NC State-Virginia football game that was set to take place in Brazil as the first college football game played in South America is being relocated to the Cavaliers' home field after organizers determined the game could not be conducted in Rio de Janeiro. Wednesday's announcement came less than 3 months before the Wolfpack and Cavs were set to open the season in Rio. Bad news in the world of college football. And lastly, ugly stuff. You can see it coming from a mile away. Baseball heading towards a lockout, possibly. Commissioner Rob Manfred said yesterday he acknowledged that he worries that Major League Baseball's labor negotiations could lead to a long work stoppage resembling the 94-95 player strike that cost the league 948 regular season games in the entire postseason. Of course I do. Manfred said Wednesday during the owners' meetings, we want to make an agreement. We made a proposal on one set of topics at the outset of negotiations. I went and said myself, we're open to whatever ideas people have, but we need a realistic framework that addresses the fans' concerns about competitive balance. You can't ignore that financial penalties have not gotten it done for us. That's right. With Major League Baseball, a lot of change on the way. The recent changes, the rule changes, have largely been a hit for Major League Baseball. Hopefully, they can keep it up and get something done because, frankly, nobody benefits from a work stoppage in baseball. That's the good, the bad, the ugly. That is our show. We will talk to you tomorrow, Friday edition of the program. We'll be talking Sioux Falls Stampede and so much more. Hope you can join us. We'll talk to you around the corner when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader. It's ESPN 102.3, AM 1000, KSOO.